genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805, 639-0008. And you'll want to keep that number handy because we'll be having not one, but two different giveaways later in the show. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is tell-alls. Each of today's segments will be a tell-all about a particular subject. My first guest belongs to a rarefied club, that small group of men who have flown to the moon and back successfully. He'll also have the hardest landing since returning back on Earth. We'll discuss his tell-all book, Flying to Earth, in which he reveals his story for the first time in over 36 years. My second segment is something new. It's a call-in segment. Several listeners have requested this, and I'll open up the mic to let callers express what's on their mind. We'll look at whatever topics you want to tackle. My third guest is a writer and editor for Sports Illustrated. He's interviewed many of the world's greatest athletes. He'll tell all about the 16 characteristics of true champions from his latest book, Greatness. And if you want to join in the conversation or if you want to ask a question, you can call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Al Warden, served as a support crew member for Apollo 9. He was the backup command module pilot for Apollo 12, and he was the acting command pilot for Apollo 15's moon mission, July the 26th through August the 7th, back in 1971. Al is one of only 24 people to have flown to the moon and back successfully. After his retirement from active duty in 1975, Al spent years in private industry before becoming the chair of the Astronaut Scholarship Fund. Interestingly, Al was listed in the Guinness Book of World Records as the most isolated human being during the time that he was alone in the command module Endeavour. When orbiting command module was at its greatest distance from his fellow astronauts Scott and Irwin, they were located in the Falcon Lem, Al was 2,235 miles away from any other human being. Al also ran unsuccessfully for the U.S. House of Representatives from Florida back in 1982. Joining us on the show, hi Al, how are you today?
Hi, Bill. How are you doing today?
Well, I am doing terrific. Thank you for being our guest. And first of all, on my behalf pleasure. Of my listeners, I want to thank you for your years of service to the United States. So thank you for that.
Thank you very much. A long time ago.
Yeah, well, it was. And you're one of those few people that have been to the moon and back. So the first and obvious question that I have for you is, describe what it's like flying in outer space at over 24,000 miles per hour.
You know, that's an interesting thing. A lot of people ask questions about that, and my response to that is you don't know you're going 25,000 miles an hour because there are no trees or road signs going by the window. I drive down in Florida on I-95 north and south a lot going up to the Cape, and I swear everybody down there is trying to do 25,000 miles an hour, but they got trees going by, so it looks like you're going fast. When you're in space, you have no sensation at all of speed.
Are there any sounds? I mean, you know, what are you focusing on? Are you focusing on the instruments?
Absolutely quiet up there, Bill. The only thing you hear inside the spacecraft is like a little electrical inverter that runs all the time. It's kind of a little humming sound. You hear the blower in the air conditioning system a little bit, but it's pretty well insulated. Outside of that, there's absolutely no noise. You're just up there floating in the silence of space, and you kind of have to make conversation with the two guys you're with to hear anything.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, floating in space in silence like that, you're left alone with your own thoughts, and that's an interesting prospect in and of itself.
Kind of, except that we're so doggone busy during your flight that you don't really have time to think much about what's going on, and it's only when you get back to Earth and you relive the flight that you begin to understand what went on and what it was all about.
Ah, my guest is Al Worden. He was the command module pilot for Apollo 15. And Al, Apollo 15 was one of the first what they called J missions to the moon. They were more scientifically based. First of all, describe for us, what was the purpose of your J mission that you went to the moon? Because you also hold some records for bringing back the most moon objects when you returned back to Earth.
Well, that's right. We were a pretty unusual flight, a risky flight, as a matter of fact. We carried the heaviest payload into lunar orbit. We carried the lunar rover, which added to our weight. That was the first time that had been carried. We also carried a scientific instrument package in the open service module that was had a couple of large cameras in it. One was a high-resolution camera that I could take pictures of objects down to about 4 feet from my orbital altitude of 60 miles.
Wow.
And the other was a mapping camera that the cartographers used to draw maps of the moon. And then I had a series of remote sensing devices like X-ray, gamma ray, all kinds of alpha particle, microwave that we had in that bay that I used to scan the surface of the moon while I was there. And the idea there is that when they bring the rocks back and they analyze them, they compare them to what we got in from remote sensing in orbit, and then you can build a program that you don't have to land, and you could actually cover the entire moon and develop a program that would tell you what the chemical composition is everywhere.
Wow, fascinating. So,
pretty extensive, and as a matter of fact, I guess I said it before, we hold the record for placing the most mass into lunar orbit. A lot of machinery we took up there.
That you did, including the lunar rover, which is something you described in your last answer. Did you train on driving the lunar rover? I mean, and what was that vehicle like? You did not.
No, okay. Bill, I didn't train on the lunar rover because I wasn't going to drive it. My job was to stay in orbit while the other two went down to the surface. So
sure.
I really didn't get too close to the lunar rover.
I was wondering if we could have you back on our car show that we have on Saturdays, and you could tell us about the performance of the lunar rover. But that's for another time and another
thing. Yeah.
And my guest is Al Worden. Al, let me ask you to speculate, though, because was it the beginning of the J missions when the American public began to grow complacent about manned spaceflight, do you think?
Well, I would guess we had a pretty good crowd for our launch because it was a rather unusual and risky flight. But I think you're right. See, along about the time we flew, they actually canceled the last three flights in the program, 18, 19, and 20. And that was a big disappointment at the time because we were certainly hoping to fly one of them. So, a couple of things were happening at the same time. NASA wanted to take that money that they could save from not flying the last three flights and put that money into the shuttle program, which at the time was about 10 years away. So that's kind of where, you know, what happened is that there was a growing apathy towards the program, plus NASA needed the money for the shuttle. Plus, I think there's another thing hidden in all that, too, and it's always been my opinion, is that after you've had that many flights to the moon, they've all been successful. The only thing that can happen would be a big disaster, and I think people got kind of chicken about it.
Well, that could be. Now, Apollo 13 was in there, and that was the aborted mission to the moon. Did that taint NASA's influence?
That was kind of a different thing, yeah.
Okay. All right. My guess is Al Worden. So, Al, the importance of your story, though, wasn't so much your accomplishments on Apollo 15, which were very great, but it was really your dismissal from NASA that's the most important part of the book, Falling to Earth. And you sort of went from the heights of success, literally, to the ignominy of being fired. So tell us the untold part of your story.
Well, the story there was that we, as most other flights before us, carried commemorative postal covers on our flight. And it was an arrangement set up by our commander, Dave Scott, with a German friend of his. And the idea was that the German stamp dealer would keep these covers for a number of years until we were well away from NASA before he sold them. And that would provide some proceeds to us that would help us get our kids through college, understanding that we were all Air Force officers. I was a major at the time,
mm-hmm.
and I was making about $800 a month, and I, you know, was looking downstream to what I would have to do to get my kids through college. So, and it was presented to us as a no problem kind of thing. We did that, but unfortunately, the German dealer sold them right after the flight. It became public. We were investigated. We actually testified before a Senate committee. I got fired from the office. Jim retired. Dave got reassigned in Houston. And the sad part of the whole thing was that they tried to find that we had done something wrong. They couldn't. And I think part of the problem there is that the same thing had been done on flights before ours or similar things. What the government did that was bad was they asked us to voluntarily turn in any extra covers that we had while they were doing the investigation, and then they put them in the National Archives and locked them away. That unfortunately violated our constitutional rights called due process. There was no court, no judge, no paperwork, no search warrant. They just locked them away, and that was the basis of a lawsuit that I started, that I instituted back in 1983.
Gotcha. Now, what was the outcome of your lawsuit back in 83?
Well, we never went to court. they were so far out on this thing that it was pretty obvious that the government and NASA was going to get a black eye if this thing went to court. So the Justice Department advised them to give everything back, and they did.
There you go. My guest is Al Warden. His book is a new tell-all. It's called Falling to Earth, an Apollo 15 Astronaut's Journey to the Moon. And Al, why did NASA take such a hard stance after turning a blind eye to Apollos 11, 12, 13, and 14 before you?
Well, Bill, I think part of the reason was that similar incidents had occurred before, like on Apollo 14 with the golf ball that Al Shepard carried to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of talk about that, but it was all denied. The Senate did investigate Apollo 14, and they whitewashed the whole thing, I think, because Al Shepard was so important. And then when Apollo 15 came along with these commemorative covers, I think they decided that it was time to make an example of somebody, and we were it.
No, that's too bad to be made an example of. That is a shame. Now, Al, I'm going to ask you to comment. You know, the space shuttle program has come to an end, finally.
Right.
NASA and space exploration from the United States are moribund at this point in time. What's next for NASA and manned spaceflight, in your opinion?
Well, the government's trying to shift some of the low Earth orbit stuff into the private sector, which may or may not be successful. I don't know. But the long-range stuff is still going to have to be done by the government because there's really no profit margin involved in that. So I think it's going to be a few years. My guess is 5-10 years we'll see the program kind of come back to life with maybe some longer-range things like maybe going to Mars. But that's going to take a while. And right now we're in a quiescent period where we don't have a capability to get our astronauts to our space station, so we have to buy space on a Russian launch vehicle to get up there, and who knows, maybe in a couple of years it'll be the Chinese or the Indians or somebody else who will take our people up. But we're going to be out of the business for a while, and we're going to see other countries going past us in space, doing things that we should be doing, but we can't because we don't have the support of Washington or the president, and I think that's a shame.
Well, it is a shame, and it is a little bit concerning. You mentioned that these other countries are going to shoot ahead of us, no pun intended, when it comes to space exploration. You mentioned China, Russia, of course. Europe has got a bid in for space, as well as Japan and India,
yep,
as you mentioned. So all of these countries are making strides while we sit dormant. The big thing is, though, the American people are not behind it. I think if there was a groundswell movement of American people, we might get some more traction. So what would it take to excite the American people about space exploration again?
Well, I think, you know, it's kind of funny. We talk about space exploration, and I think it's a good thing. We're ultimately going to have to develop a capability to go somewhere else other than Earth because, as we all know, the Earth is not going to last forever.
Mm-hmm.
That time might be a long time in the future, but you got to start somewhere, and we've taken some baby steps in that direction. Once we get propulsion systems developed that will take us other places, other solar systems, then maybe we'll find a planet where we can go live if we can't live here anymore. I think there's a genetic drive in all humans that the imperative for all things that are living here on Earth is survival of the species, and I think humans are no exception. And I think that that there's kind of a genetic drive in the space program to get us out there so that we can survive. That may be 1,000 years from now, but it's a long, slow process, and we will eventually get there. And right now, we're in a slow period in the space program, but it'll pick up again. I'm confident that we're going to keep pressing forward.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you're confident. My guest is Al Warden. Al, what about the asteroid belt? I mean, there are things that we could actually do of economic value out there. We could harvest diamonds. There are minerals, rare earth minerals, that are in short abundance here on planet Earth that we could bring back and create all kinds of new alloys and things like that just by mining the asteroid belt. Do you think that that's a viable destination for space exploration?
You know, Bill, to be very honest with you, I don't know enough about it to be able to comment on it. I suspect that there are things out there that we don't even know about that will be valuable to us. But we got to get out there to find out, and that's going to be the long pull.
That it is. My guest is Al Warden, author of the book Falling to Earth. And Al, what sort of people should read your book, Falling to Earth? Who's going to be interested in reading it?
Well, you know, it's a little different than most of the books that other astronauts have written, in that it's kind of it's my personal journey through life and through NASA, and my problems after the flight, and my lawsuit against the U.S. government. So it's a little bit more than just going to the moon and coming back. I think it would be of interest to most anybody. And as a matter of fact, anybody who wants to find out more about it can go check out my website, which is alwarden.com, alwarden.com. There's a lot of information there. They'll see a lot of pictures. They'll see the resumes of the book. They'll see reviews. And they'll find out where to buy it if they want to get it.
Now, that is great. Now, Al, what do you want readers to take away after reading your book, Falling to Earth?
Well, I guess what I'd really like to say about all that is that no matter what happens to you in life, you keep pressing ahead. You don't let things get you down. You keep working your way, and things will come out all right. What goes around comes around. And if you do the best you can and you keep going, you don't give up, then things happen for you.
Don't give up. It's a great message for anybody who wants to read it. My guest has been Al Warden, author of the book Falling to Earth, an Apollo 15 Astronaut Journey to the Moon. Al, again, for people who are interested, give us your website or where they can go on the internet to learn more about you,
Okay, yeah, it's www.alwarden, all one word, alwarden.com.
Alwarden.com.
You can get all kinds of information there.
Oh, that is great. Al, it has truly been an honor. Thank you so much for being our special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks.